You are Locked On Jets, your daily New York Jets podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Locked On Jets podcast, February 21st, 2019. I'm your host, John B. from gangrenenation.com. Thank you so much for joining us today as we hit a mailbag Thursday. Each week we try to do a mailbag show on Thursday for you. These are questions that have been both emailed to me and submitted through the comment section of gangrenenation.com. Really appreciate the questions each week. We'll get to as many as we can today. Let's jump on in. Our first question was emailed to me. With the collective bargaining agreement expiring in 2021, what effect will it have on this year's free agent class? It seems like both sides are digging in for a money grab. And of course, the collective bargaining agreement is the agreement that pretty much sets the rules for the NFL in terms of anything contract related, the salary cap, how much revenue the players get. Pretty much everything you'd want to know about the business side of the league is set by the collective bargaining agreement, which is, of course, an agreement. That's pretty much exactly what it sounds like. It's an agreement that's bargained between the players' association and the league owners. It's a really good question. I think it's a little early, though, for it to have any impact because, again, you know, we're still a couple years out. I think most free agents who get signed this year, their teams are going to be able to escape those deals within 2 years. That's pretty standard for the course in free agency. Most free agent contracts are escapable in 1 to 2 years. They're very rare do you have a contract with where you are stuck with a player for more than 2 years. So I think that it's probably not going to have a major impact this year. And, you know, even next year, I'm not totally sold that it's going to have a big impact because how can you prepare for a deal when you don't know what the deal is? I mean, you don't know how this collective bargaining agreement is going to change. So how can you plan in advance? You kind of just have to go the way you kind of just have to plan for things continuing and maybe build some contingencies in there. But I don't really know how you can prepare for a new collective bargaining agreement when you're approaching free agency because you don't know what it's going to look like. And yeah, I mean, we could be on the way for some more labor strife with the NFL. You may remember that there was the lockout from 2011, which actually did not end up costing any regular season game. I think there was one preseason game that was canceled, but it led to a pretty chaotic start to the 2011 season where training camps were kind of thrown together. Free agency was happening as training camps were taking place. That was a pretty crazy time, but I don't think it's going to, I think if it has an impact, it'll be in future years. I still think we're probably a little too far out, but even then, even as we get closer, I just think it's tough to build a strategy around an agreement you don't know, which you don't know the contents of. So, you know, how would you change your strategy? I think you're just going to have to proceed as though there's the status quo, and then maybe you'll be a little more careful to build yourself some outs in certain contracts without knowing what the agreement's going to look like going forward. But I think that for now, the impact is going to be fairly minimal. Our next question, does the cutting of Mike Pinnell lead you to believe that the Jets are in fact going to be running more four-man fronts and will be mostly looking to fill the interior line spots with penetrating three technique players? Can I interest you in a 2019 model, Quinnen Williams? Quinnen Williams, of course, is the top prospect from Alabama, a possible top three pick, guy who could interest the Jets. Well, here's the thing about Pinnell, and the Jets declined the option on Pinnell this week. He actually took on a bigger role. He took on a bigger role than you'd think down the stretch. He kind of phased Steve McClendon out of the lineup in some ways, and he took on a more prominent role. I'm not convinced he's gone, though. Sometimes what you'll see is teams will decline the options on players and just bring him back for a cheaper rate. Pinnell was more expensive than you think he was. I mean, the Jets actually gave him a decent-sized steal for a guy of his role last year. So it could be a scenario where they're just looking to bring him back for cheaper. But, I mean, the thing about Pinnell, and he's a good player, but the Pinnells of this world are not necessarily that valuable in the NFL. They can be obtained relatively cheaply. I mean, look at how the Jets got Pinnell off waivers from the Packers. Now, I know there were a few things off the field, or there were some suspension issues with him that led to him being available, but those guys are just not that tough to find. You think about the deal the Jets gave Steve McClendon, who's pure nose tackle, pure two down guy, a run stopper who leaves the field on passing downs. Jets were not paying him that much. And today's NFL is a passing league, so your guys who are the more pure run stoppers tend to not get paid all that much. I do think it's possible that it's not necessarily about 3 or 4 man lines, because today's NFL is not really about 4-3 or 3-4. Everybody's running 3 man lines. Everybody's running 4 man lines. But yeah, do you want all 4 of your linemen to be penetrating, or do you want one guy out there to try and tie up multiple blockers? It's possible Greg Williams is going to want nothing but penetrators, in which case Pinnell may be phased out. See, I think people get it wrong when they talk about scheme fits in today's NFL. It's not 3-4, 3-4-3 anymore. Every defense has elements of the classic 3-4. Every defense has elements of the classic 4-3. Now it's about other things. It's about what types of coverage do you play. It's like, what roles do you want your linemen to take, things like that. And I think it's possible, but I think it's too early to say. I think people are maybe jumping the gun a little bit, assuming Pinnell's definitely gone. It's possible, but I'm not sure it's a 100% deal that he's totally gone. Next question is about cap space. Over the Cap shows the Jets with $102 million of cap space, assuming a total cap of $190 million. Is the $12 million rolled over from last year part of that $102 million, or do you add that $12 million on top of it? So Lot to digest there. Over the Cap, of course, is the great salary cap website that gives you contract information throughout the league. Right now, they're projecting the Jets with $102 million of cap space, according to them. And, of course, in the NFL, any cap space you don't use in 1 year can be rolled over to the next year. So the question essentially is, does that $102 million include the $12 million the Jets can roll over, or is that on top of the $102 million? And I'm going to answer that with a non-answer. We don't know how much cap space the Jets have right now because the league has not set the salary cap for 2019 yet. These are projections. People like to project how much they is, and they think they have a ballpark figure, but we don't know the exact amount yet. So I think even if we're talking the over the cap projection, it's a phenomenal website. I recommend it if you ever want information on NFL contractual news, if you ever want to figure out how the cap works, just want to take a look at the way the Jets contracts are structured. It's a phenomenal resource, but nobody really knows how much money the Jets are going to have under the cap. We can ballpark it because we have a general idea of how much the cap's going to raise based on certain metrics, past increases in the cap, but we don't know for sure. It's going to be in the neighborhood of $100 million probably, but we don't have an exact figure until the league officially announces when the cap is set, which will be happening soon because they're going to have to set it. They have to set it before free agency begins, which is coming up. So we're not going to be waiting that much longer, but the league has yet to announce the salary cap figure for 2019 in the NFL. If you're a Jets fan, you want the increase to be as low as possible, and it may sound counterintuitive, but for a team that's already got a ton of cap space, you don't want the increase to be that great, because no matter what happens, the Jets have a lot of caps. Let's say, and these cap increases, you see the projections every year, and the cap increases always seem to be larger than what's projected. You don't want that for the Jets, because let's say the Jets have $100 million, and then the increase is $5 million more than you're expecting. Is the difference between having $100 million in cap space and $105 million in cap space really that great for a team like the Jets? No, I don't think so. Whereas a team that maybe has $10 million in cap space, a team that thinks it's going to get $10 million in cap space and then gets an extra five, so now instead of 10, I have $15 million, that can make a difference for that team. That may be a team that can bid against the Jets on a player the Jets want, because suddenly now they've got a little extra, they have more room to work with than they thought. Or they might have a player who would be a cap casualty, but then, oh wow, we have $5 million extra, we can keep this guy. And that cap casualty may be a player who interests the Jets. So for a team like the Jets, there's just a point where an extra dollar cap space doesn't make a big difference. And I think the Jets are probably at that point when you're around $100 million under the cap. Whereas a team with lesser money, $5 million in extra cap space makes a big difference. I'm just throwing that number of $5 million, it's random. It could be $7 million. It could be, I don't know what I don't know what the cap's gonna be, but you want the increase in the cap from 2018 to 2019 to be as low as possible, because you don't want to just give new other teams more cap space. Yes, the Jets get more cap space too, but it's going to help the other teams probably more than it's going to help the team like the Jets that already has a ton of cap space. Next question, what does winning free agency look like? Let's focus on the Jets' top 5 free agent signings for 2019. Which 5 players do you want to see on the roster going into next season? Well, I don't know that the Jets are necessarily in a place that will be quote-unquote winning free agency, because to me, winning free agency is getting more value out of the players you sign than what you're paying. So the way I like to look at it, and this is difficult to quantify, but every player is providing you a certain dollar amount in value by their play. You know, a player is producing so much that he's giving you $10 million worth of value. So essentially, if a player is giving me $10 million worth of value from his on-field performance, I want to be paying him, I want to have him to be on a contract that's less than $10 million, because that means I'm getting surplus value. So to me, winning free agency tends to happen with the less heralded guys, the guys who don't sign after, on the first wave, the guys who don't take the big money deals, guys who are either, you know, under the radar because they're coming off an injury, which has teams steering away from them, whether they were in the wrong system and your system works better so you can get them for cheap, whether they're just not highly valued by the league, whether their agent just messes free agency up and they end up with a lesser contract than they should get. Whether that happens a lot. I mean, that tends to be the way teams win in free agency, is you take advantage of the guys who overplayed their hand and now get stuck with lesser contracts than they deserve because their agent did not do a good job. So those are the type of guys I think, you know, help you win free agency. I'm not sure those are the types of guys the Jets are going to sign, though, because the Jets don't have talent on the team. It's really tough to build a team through free agency, but that's pretty much the position the Jets have left themselves in. The Jets kind of have to build their team through a free agency, which is, you know, not a great place to be. I hear people say all the time, well, if you can't get excited for $100 million of cap space, what can you get excited for? How about having good players on the team already? How about, you know, homegrown talent that you give second contracts? That's what gets me excited, not a hollow shell of a roster and a ton of cap space. But given the position the Jets are in, they pretty much have to try and make big plays in free agency, which I don't love because, you know, it's, you see the teams that are declared the winners of free agency in March frequently lose free agency in the long run. I mean, look at last year. We remember what a genius signing Trumaine Johnson was, according to a lot of people. How's that looking now? The big money free agent deals, you almost always end up looking bad. I mean, there are not that many that, if you look at it, especially the teams that spend big in free agency, they're declared the winners in March, but a lot of those teams end up paying for it once the fall comes around. They end up looking like losers in free agency once the fall comes around. So, you know, which five guys would I want? Well, again, I don't love the fact that the Jets are going to have to spend big in free agency, but I feel like the Jets almost have to spend big in free agency. So which guys would I want? Let me name five. How about some bookend pass rushers? We'll get Dee Ford from Kansas City. We'll get Flowers from New England. We'll address the offensive line with Paradis from Denver and Saffold from the Rams. That'll help the offensive line quite a bit. And then how about Le'Veon Bell as an offensive playmaker? So there's five right there. And, you know, you'd probably spend a little bit over half the cap space, but you've upgraded a number of positions, taken some big swings. And, you know, with big risk, sometimes comes failure. But I don't see what the alternative is for the Jets. Just don't have any players on this roster. So they have to spend the cap space on somebody. I wish they didn't have to essentially build their full roster through high-priced free agents, but they don't really have many players on taking up second contracts. They don't have many star players on the team, so that means they're going to have to roll the dice, and, you know, we'll just see what happens there. Next question, Adam Gase input. Hey, JB, do you think with Gase as the head coach, his input and supposed strong offensive background will hopefully change Maccagnan's approach to how he drafts offensive players, most notably wide receiver and the offensive line? Well, I'm sure Gase will have input. I'm sure, you know, the draft tends to be a collaborative process no matter which team you're talking about. But I'm not sure I necessarily agree with the premise that Maccagnan doesn't focus on the offensive side of the football. I think that you look at his draft history, especially his early picks. I mean, yes, three of the four first-round picks have been on the defensive side of the ball. But you have to remember, two of them, Leonard Williams and Jamal Adams, the perception at the time, whether it was right or wrong, was that it was too good to be true that this player fell to the Jets, so the Jets had to take him. That was the perception. That was the logic, I think, behind the Jets taking those players. Then you look at the second round. I mean, second round, he's taken Devin Smith. He took the quarterback who we shall not name in 2016. He took in the third round, he'd take a wide receiver, Ardarius Stewart. He's drafted wide receivers. Stewart, Hanson, and Smith were picks in the first four rounds. I think Maccagnan's shown you that he's not afraid to take offensive players early. Now, Gase will have some input, and Gase seems to be focused on the offensive side of the ball. But, you know, Greg Williams, I'm sure, I mean, we've heard stories about the Jets assistants also having some say, you know, being able to voice their views on things. So I'm not sure it's necessarily a lock that the Jets will focus more on offense, because I'm sure the defensive coaching staff will want their say and will have their say as well. So, I mean, I think your hope is that they'll start drafting more offensive linemen early. I mean, they just have not done that. Hopefully, but I mean, I'm not sure. I mean, I think it might be a philosophical thing with Maccagnan. I mean, I remember a comment he made early in his tenure about how the good teams in the league are able to draft and develop offensive linemen later on in the draft. I think it may just be a philosophical thing with him. I'm not sure. So we'll see. Which, you know, drafting and developing offensive linemen in the late rounds of the draft, it's a great strategy if you know how to do it, if you know how to find talent, and if you have the coaches in place to develop it, but not that easy to do. So we'll see. I guess the answer is we'll see. I'm not totally sold on it, though, because, I mean, I think that, you know, we've seen the Jets draft some offensive players early. I'm not sure they've necessarily been inclined to draft defensive players. I think it's been more they just love the value of the player they were drafting at the spot they were drafting when it came to Williams and Adams. I'm not sure it's necessarily the fact that they were defensive players. You know, I remember, I think John Morton got blamed for the Ardarius Stewart pick, so even though Bowles was the defensive coach, the Jets under this regime have claimed that, you know, the offensive coordinator had its way behind one of the picks. So I wouldn't be surprised, even though Gase is an offensive coach, to see Greg Williams and the defensive staff also be able to state their case for a defensive player at the top of the draft. Our next question: out of interest, would you agree it's highly unlikely Gase hired Williams and Vitt without a thought for the issues it may raise? The reporting on this has been fairly sensationalist. So Greg Williams, of course, the defensive coordinator for the Jets, Joe Vitt, who's Adam Gase's father-in-law, is also an assistant on the defensive side of the ball. And these two have a big history. These two were kind of adversaries. They coached with the Saints together. They were on Sean Payton's staff during Bountygate. They were kind of on opposite sides. If you read some of the stuff Joe Vitt said about Greg Williams, I mean, I have this one article open. This is what something Vitt said: I want to show you the situations where Greg Williams is a liar, where Greg Williams is narcissistic, where Greg Williams has lost his mind in situations. He's got this insatiable desire to talk about himself. He's got this insatiable desire to talk about how good he is and his family is. And of course, all the BS stories. You've got to work your way through it. You've got to, you know, you've got to try and get to the meat of potatoes and what's true and not true. And after a while, it just gets to you. It just gets to you. So, I mean, these are some of the things Joe Vitt said about Greg Williams. So I'm not sure I necessarily agree that the media has been overly sensationalist, because this is a big story. I mean, can guys change? Yes. Can you bury the hatchet and get along with somebody who was a former adversary of yours? Can enemies turn into friends? Of course. But this is a big story. I mean, the fact that these guys were enemies to this extent and now are on the same coaching staff. I mean, look, the media does a lot of bad things when they cover the Jets, but how do you not cover this, something like this? I mean, this is a big deal, the fact they did this. Yes, well, Gase may have given some thought to it, but just giving thought to it doesn't necessarily mean that it's going to work out. So, I mean, I think it is something worth watching. I'm not saying that necessarily this is all doomed, but you can clearly see where there might be an issue here. I mean, these guys clearly have a very rocky history, and putting them on the same coaching staff does raise some potential complications. So, you know, I'm not sure I necessarily would agree with the premise that this is just ridiculous, that the media is making a big deal out of this. It is a big deal. It is a big deal. I mean, this was a big major story in the NFL, and these two guys really seem to dislike each other. So putting them on the same coaching staff, you know, it certainly does raise some questions, I would have to say. You know, we have another question about Williams and Vitt. They had a falling out with the Saints. Do they need to be BFFs? No. If they make it work for the Jets and the Jets D is good, will anybody really care if they get along or not? Well, yeah. I mean, I think if the Jets defense is good, then nobody will care. But I think it's much easier to be good if you have everybody on the same page and working together. Whereas if you have a situation where guys don't like each other, they start undermining each other, they're not working on the same stuff, messages are going out, personality conflicts boil over, then yeah, that could be a problem, and that could prevent the Jets from being effective. You know, you may be able to work. Now, on the other hand, you may be able to work with somebody you don't like. I mean, it certainly is possible to be able to produce at work when you don't like the people you're around, but it certainly makes it easier when everyone's on the same page. And look, I'm not stating, I don't know what their relationship is today. Again, it's been a long time. It's been 7 years since the suspensions. since all that happened, over 7 years, really. So, I mean, listen, in 7 years, yeah, your relationship with a lot of people changes. They may end up being fine now. We just don't know. But I certainly don't think it's over the top. I certainly don't think people are out of line for asking questions about it. I think that there are... I don't see how you can look at this and not at least wonder a little bit about what's going to happen. I'm not sure. Like, I'm not saying that it's all going to fall apart, but I do think it's it's something that is worth watching, certainly. That's the show for today. Thanks for listening. This has been the Locked On Jets podcast. It's part of the Locked On Podcast Network. As always, if you enjoy the show, leave it a good review in iTunes and subscribe on iTunes or Spotify. Have a great Thursday, everybody. We'll be back again tomorrow to close out our week.